Hello, 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 and welcome back to Armchairs and Friends. This is episode two. Funny enough, it was actually recorded before episode one, but I'm posting it in a different order, so bear with. Anyway, today's episode is an interview with Cullen Brown. Cullen is a sports photographer from the North Island, and he's a great friend of mine, and he is very, very, very talented at what he does. So we chat about a few things from him getting into freelancing, starting out as a business and shooting sports, along with a few other things. I'm actually recording this a few days after we have recorded the podcast, so I'm not 100% sure what we chat about. It'll be as much a surprise for you as it is me. Anyway, I hope you enjoy it and let's get into it. Thanks for tuning in. I also have to apologize because I am not sure how good this audio is going to be, but I mean, we work with what we have, especially during this lockdown. All right, Cullen, welcome to Armchairs and Friends. It's good to have you on. For anyone listening that doesn't know who you are, do you want to introduce yourself quickly?
Yeah, so my name's Cullen Brown. You can also find me on Instagram at Cullen Brown. I'm a semi-professional photographer specializing in sports and kind of adventure outdoors photography. I come from a sport background, so that's kind of where my photography leans towards as well.
I thought it'd be quite funny to tell everyone how we first met because I think it's a bit of a funny story, especially the way you tell it.
Yeah, by all means. So Harry being the legend that he was, out of the blue, after we've been following each other on Instagram for a while, decided that he was going to come and shoot Road Nationals in Cambridge. And being that I was in the general area, I agreed to pick him up from the airport and get him from Auckland down to Cambridge. And, all good, all happy. And I
Host
think
me
it was
with
a
your family friends for like 3 days that I didn't really know.
Shout out to Koza for putting up Harry and me for the umpteenth time. But yeah, so all good and well, all set. And if my memory serves me correctly, I think it was quite an early flight. And yeah, up at kind of 6 a.m. in the morning, and your perspective changes a little bit when you get up earlier than usual. So I'm sitting in the car at the domestic terminal thinking, man, I really hope this guy's as nice as he sounds over the phone. I hope I'm not just gonna pick up some weird dude from the airport and then have to spend the next 3 days with him. And, well, I mean, looking back on it, the rest is history, but for half an hour there, I was a little bit concerned.
Yeah, it was quite funny. I guess we were both sort of thinking the same thing because I was, like you'll chat to people on Instagram, but you've never met them. And then you're like, oh yeah, let's meet up. It's all good. It's cool. But then suddenly it's you're in a different city and you've committed to being with each other for like 3 or 4 days. And so I was kind of on that plane, eh? And I'm like, oh, I hope he's all good. So I hope he's not like real weird or like just like real like not fun to spend a weekend with. But it was actually, it turned out really good. And we shot Road Nationals, which was incredible. And it was a lot of fun. But it's quite funny meeting each other for the first time like that out of the blue.
Love at first sight, as they call it. Minus the man bun.
Yeah, that's true. I did have the man bun back then, didn't I? Yeah, I'm glad that's gone. Did you like it?
I'm on the fence at best. Not a big fan of man
Are you being polite because you're on a podcast?
buns. No, how could you tell, mate?
You guys won't know this because the recording has been deleted, but Cullen just had to storm out of the room and tell his dog to shut up with many other words as well in there. I think he's a bit nervous. It's a bit of nerves.
Quick disclaimer for the SPCA: I am nothing but a loving animal owner, and I feed my dog handmade, warm, nice meals every night, and he has a great life. Thank you. Disclaimer over. Carry on with the pod.
Lucky wee thing. Yes, so I wanted to say as well that you also come from a cycling background, and it's quite funny because I think cyclists and photographers are a bit of a rare combo, but we're both like that, so it's quite neat, I think.
I think, are we a year apart age-wise?
Well, I'm 21. How old are you? 22, right?
Oh, I'm 23, 2 years
Oh, 2 years
apart.
apart.
Well,
But it's like you're 19.
anyway. Thanks. I'll take that as a compliment. I am a young, free spirit, as they say. But yeah, I mean, existed in a very small ecosystem without kind of ever coming across each other, which was very interesting, looking back on it. But yeah, I think it was pretty cool that both managed to, yeah.
Find each other. That's romantic. Is that why you panicked? It was sounding too good to be true.
Oh, yeah, man, I'm blushing. I'm glad this isn't a video pod.
So I wanted to ask you, because obviously I want this podcast to be a lot to do with photography and the whole industry. How did you get into photography and where did that journey start for you?
Right, so if we're going to throw it all the way back, my dad and I actually went to France in 2013, I believe, for the 100th edition of the tour. And I actually asked dad if I could get a camera heading over there, and the response was actually no. So I spent the whole trip taking photos on my old busted up Samsung, which I look back on and laugh. But I didn't take much interest at high school in photography after that until cycling actually took me overseas to America and to Canada in 2017. And while I was there at a race called, I don't know, it was a race in Minnesota. On my 19th birthday of all days, sorry, I'll record that bit again. On my 19th birthday of all days, had a big crash and landed on my head, which resulted in a couple of months off the bike and feeling a little bit lost and without purpose, and still having 3 or 4 months to kill before I headed home, kind of looking for things to do. And it turned out, quick shout out, my teammate and professional sports photographer, Adam Coble, he is a sports photographer, and he sold me his first ever camera for $100. It was a Nikon D3000, I believe, with a couple of kit lenses. And yeah, I mean, might as well branch off into the best piece of advice I can give anybody that was also passed on to me. If you want to shoot, learn how to shoot manual, because it will change your entire approach to
I
photography.
hate to interrupt, but I thought you were just going to say, if you want to get into photography, don't shoot Nikon.
Yeah, so my piece of advice is second only to that one, I think. No, all good. I mean, we're always open for good advice. I don't know if this is so much a cycling photography podcast as it is a photography advice podcast, and
I
that would
have
be a
no
good
idea
first
what
one.
kind of podcast this is. I think
I mean, while we're bagging on brands, don't shoot Olympus if you want to shoot sport, for the love of God. I tried, it doesn't, yeah, nah, just don't do it. Micro Four Thirds is not the way. Get a full frame sensor, you'll be good.
Absolutely.
But yeah, sorry, tangent over. There's going to be a few of those. So my first camera was a Nikon D3000, a little bit busted up, but had a good life, I would say, compared to probably most Nikon D3000s that live in their camera bags. The first event that I shot was actually Tour de l'Abitibi. Excuse my pronunciation, it's probably not very good. But yeah, I raced there as a junior in 2016. And being good friends of John Rippon, I decided to invite myself back and be their assistant DS slash Swanee slash, trying to think of a word for bitch boy. But
What a boy.
there we go. You can, water boy. And yeah, many thanks to JR, who let me just, tool around and sit in the passenger seat of the team car and snap away with my camera rather than fiddle around with water bottles, which is what I probably should have been doing. But yeah, and it's all kind of history from there. I think I shot a few thousand photos there, just spamming away. Quick interjection. Yeah, another good piece of advice is take a lot of photos because one in every thousand will be a banger. Words to live
That's
by.
the way with sports
But yeah,
photography. Yeah, you go to shoot like a race and you come back with like 3 or 4,000 photos and you're like, oh yeah, 20 of these are cool.
hold on, I gotta pause there. Can you hear the vacuum going behind me? Should I check my audio? Is it...
I'll just put a wee note at the start saying audio may be trash.
I guess I can always come back and record another episode.
Oh, absolutely.
Once you blow up, bro.
Dude, if I'm still doing this while we're over in Europe, you'll definitely be on many.
Let's go.
Anything else to add on where it started?
Carrying on from there. Nah, fuck, mom's coming up the stairs. Hold on.
Mom, I'm trying to podcast.
What are you talking about? I don't live at home. I'm an experienced professional photographer. That
housekeeper. Housekeeper was vacuuming.
Yep. Just me and the housekeeper. All four of them.
All right, so thanks for that. Sort of telling me how you got into photography. Like, I knew some of that obviously, but it was cool to hear it in a bit more detail. Obviously you mentioned it a bit with racing in Canada and the US. You've been to quite a few countries, especially for someone quite young. Off the top of your head, like, run me through what countries you have been.
Yeah, so it all started in my last year of high school, where I went to Australia and Canada for cycling. And just kind of branched out from there. On the back of those opportunities, I spent a year, or the best part of 8 months, in the United States and Canada again, just racing my bike and subsequently taking photos. And from there, I went back home again and wasn't all that inspired to start university. And after kind of floating around and not really knowing what I wanted, I had the opportunity arise to go to Nepal with my Dutch friend Anne, and that was kind of the start of it. From there, in the start of 2019, so I had the opportunity to go to Nepal in 2019, and so I just booked a one-way ticket, and my friend Anne and I flew to Kathmandu, and she had a couple of things planned. Primarily, the goal was to do the Annapurna circuit and after that follow it up with the Everest Base Camp trek, except we had a slightly different route planned than usual, but we won't get too much into that now. Coming up to the end of that trip, we're only supposed to spend a couple of months there, I believe. On the back of my one-way flight, I was looking at where I could fly to next, and not particularly wanting to go back to New Zealand in the middle of winter, I decided to fly to Slovakia, of all places. I managed to get a cheap flight, and so kind of off I went. Arrived in Bratislava in Slovakia without any problems. My bags, not so much. They arrived 5 days later. And from there, I spent 5 months on a meager $5,000 New Zealand, just kind of trekking my way across Europe. Places I visited include kind of the Czech Republic, Austria, Poland, Belgium, Germany, Andorra, special mention. Yeah, just kind of tooling around, and what was kind of meant to be a quick backpacker trip kind of evolved into something more revolving around sports photography and kind of taking photos of whatever I could.
That's awesome, eh? That's a serious, like, seriously impressive list of countries.
I look back on it now and it's interesting. Like, I look at Europe the way that I look at the United States, and although they're all very different places, they're also quite similar, and in a way it's like being in the United States. Like, I flew from California to Oklahoma, and the contrast between those two states, then they might as well be different countries. So although it might be an impressive list, I just consider it to be, I don't know, get yourself there and you can visit wherever you want to.
When you went to Europe, you were on a budget of $5,000 New Zealand money. That is obviously, well, I don't know how much everyone knows about Europe, but it's obviously a very small budget for, what was it, 3 months in Europe?
Yeah, no, so I believe it was 5,500 New Zealand I had, and I spent just under 5 months total in Europe. So a shoestring budget, to say the least. I survived by mainly using the buses and trains. I bought myself a tent for about 30 euros, I think, from, I think it was a, or what's it called, a European equivalent of a Rebel Sport, I guess. What else? Yeah. Staying in campgrounds and the cheapest hostels that I could find. And yeah, I spent two months in Holland working for a team that Ethan Batt was riding for in exchange for somewhere to sleep.
I remember that period because that was when I started following you on Instagram, I think, was when you were in Europe and you were with the team Ethan was with, because I remember you'd always do their races and then on your story you'd post all the photos from the stage and they were always from the team car, and I remember thinking to myself, like, wow, what a cool opportunity, but also like so close, yet you're stuck in the team car. For anyone that doesn't understand cycling, basically the peloton rolls along with a bunch of cyclists and then all the team cars follow behind it. So if you're stuck in the team car, you just sit behind the race all day. So it's quite hard to obviously photograph from that position.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing that springs to mind is, I believe it was Enkhuizen, again, forgive my mispronunciation of that. We had a 160-kilometer, I guess you would call it a kermesse, for non-cyclists. That's basically just a circuit race. I think the circuit was 5 kilometers, dead flat, just a square circuit, 5 right-hand corners, and I was sat in the team car for it, and I think we drew like the 13th or 14th car in the convoy. So, yeah, you can imagine awesome racing being had because it's Dutch racing and they're nuts. They go so hard, but you don't see much when you're in a crazy convoy. Occasionally you go up to feed, but for the most part, yeah, just parked up in the team car getting thrown around with a backseat full of wheels and water bottles and tools. And that story pretty much sums up my time in Holland, I would say. Taking a few photos at the start, at the end, and then just getting abused by a backseat full of bike wheels.
That's super tough, especially as a photographer, because I feel like you so desperately want to get the photographs, and the action shots are the ones people care about the most. You know, like your shots before and after the stage and the race, they look cool, but you know, people only care about them so much. They want to see themselves racing and they want to see the race, but you're stuck in the car and you're trying to do your job as like a team mechanic or soigneur, but you just want to get these photos as well.
Exactly, yeah. And I think a small part of me was desperate to get out of the team car and shoot, but there was a much bigger part of me that was realistic about the fact that the only way I could afford to survive at that point was my free accommodation through this Dutch cycling team. So I was kind of more than happy to park up in the back seat and just, you know, take my lumps, so to speak, which again, not such a bad scenario. There's worse things to be doing than a bike mechanic in a team car.
Until you ask any bike mechanic that's worked in Europe.
Yeah, no, you'd have to pay me quite well to go back and do it again, or give me some real nice accommodation. If anybody out there's interested,
So I also know you have another good story from rocking up to shoot some races with your tent at campsites and having a bit of a situation with the power. Do you want to tell me about that, those times?
Yeah, I think there's a few of those stories, but I mean, we might as well start with the first one that springs to mind. So right at the beginning of my trip, flew into Bratislava, and while I was waiting for my bags, I was kind of like, oh, well, Vienna is a place that I've heard of, and it's nearby. It's like a couple of hours by bus. So I decided to head over there once my bags arrived. And while I was there, I met an Austrian photographer who was I met an Austrian who told me there was a mountain bike World Cup nearby soon. And curious, I asked what it was. And lo and behold, it was Nové Mesto World Cup in the Czech Republic. And it was relatively close by, like only 300-ish kilometers, which, you know, by European standards, not a long way. So that was where it all began. I headed out that afternoon, bought my tent, bought my little sleeping roll that cost me €4, and kind of off I went the next day. Two trains later, I was in a different country. And the day after that, I found my way to Nové Mesto, which, for those who don't know, is no more than a tiny village in the Czech Republic. There is not much there at all. And while I was looking for accommodation, I found that a lot of these mountain bike World Cups actually provide a paddock for people to park their camper vans in, because that's kind of how the juniors do it over there. Their families just own camper vans, and they just roll up to these races, and that's where they sleep on site in a paddock right next to the circuits. And so that's what I did. I paid a whole €5 for a little piece of grass, turned down the power option because I didn't think I had anything that I could plug a tent into or anything worth plugging into.
Just so I can imagine in my head, so I get a good picture, how big is this tent?
This tent's pretty small. It's a two-person tent, I believe, once translated to English. But they would have been two small people, so about big enough for me and my backpack. Happy as Larry. I'm at a mountain bike World Cup. I've got my little tent. Everybody around me thinks that's a great joke because they all have these nice camper vans and I'm wedged in between two of them with a little tent. But I'm happy. I'm in the Czech Republic. I'm at Nové Mesto. I'm at a mountain bike World Cup. Never been to one before, so what more could you want? Paid €5 for my accommodation, which is, I think, the average cost of a motel room or equivalent, whatever the Europeans want to call them, was about €250. So I thought I was on a winner there. And as it turned out, there was a bunch of extension cords running out from a power box right in front of where I set my tent up. So being me, every night after, well, I was there for about 5 nights, I think, because multiple days of racing and warm-ups, and I was just stoked to be there. I didn't want to be anywhere else. So each night or each afternoon after the racing, I'd go and sit on the piece of grass in front of my tent, plug into this power outlet, and that's how I would edit my photos, sitting in the grass. And while my back may still not have forgiven me for it, probably the best possible outcome, I'd say.
It's funny because as a photographer, and especially a sports photographer, right, like it looks so glamorous, like you're always posting beautiful images and people are like, wow, you have the best job. But the reality is, behind all those images, you're like editing in some like horrible little cafe while it's pouring with rain outside, and there's like, you know, it's like 25 people over its max limit, you've got no room, a crappy PowerPoint, and yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, I'm not going to complain. It's all part of the adventure, and I definitely don't regret a single moment of it. I think the budget of the average sports photographer is probably somewhat lower than a lot of the athletes that they're shooting. So, yeah, while the athletes are all parked up in nice hotels, you have dirtbags like me sleeping in tents. So I certainly wouldn't describe myself as the average sports photographer, but yeah.
Well, we're heading over next year to go shoot some big races, so I'm kind of hoping we can do a little nicer than tents in a paddock fighting for power, but time will tell.
Yeah. I mean, we'll be in a paddock, but we'll be in a van fighting for power, I think is best case.
Yeah, let's hope so. All right. So to change up topics, you've actually very recently made the move to start going full time with your photography and start putting a lot of effort into freelancing and earning a living through that. How has that been going for you?
I mean, while I'm rolling all the shout outs, I might as well shout out Sophie Piercy and her well, ongoing project slash business, the Creator's Handbook, her course about social media, I guess management and pitching and that kind of thing. Extremely helpful, and that kind of influenced me to decide to just put my foot down and decide to do it. I'd say for at least a year I've been waiting for the right moment, as people like to say, and yeah, in the absence of that moment and getting sick of waiting for it, I just decided to pull the trigger. And I certainly wouldn't describe it as easy. Not making it any easier for myself by deciding to almost exclusively do sports photography and outdoor adventure. I think in the future I'll probably branch out and try and do some other stuff because New Zealand's not big enough. The money's just not really there. But yeah, I have found it pretty tricky. This lockdown that we're currently in hasn't made it any easier. But I mean, I get to do what I love, and I think I'm finding that you don't mind putting in the hard work when you enjoy what you're doing. And right now, that's what I'm focusing on, is just kind of building up my processes, learning more about how the industry works, and just trying to lay down some roots.
Absolutely. That's awesome to hear. Obviously I've been doing it for a bit longer than you, but I definitely went through that those early stages as well, so I can definitely relate to that. And hopefully a few people listening can as well. What's been like your biggest learning curve with it so far?
I'd say going from being an enthusiast photographer to a professional, it's exactly that, right? You go from being somebody who enjoys taking photos to somebody who still enjoys taking photos, but now your livelihood depends on it and you need to be paid. And in the beginning, like I was passionate, I still am passionate about taking photos, but if you like a photo, you want it to be exposed to people, and I think that motivates a lot of photographers to just put their work out for free because they want it to be seen. They want to share their art, their craft with other people. And I think learning to put my foot down and be willing to say no, like I'm happy for this to stay in my hard drive if people aren't willing to pay, that was definitely the steepest learning curve I've had so far. But yeah, it's a process. And once I did learn to put my foot down, it became easier and easier. And I think it's about valuing your work. I don't know about Harry. I imagine he's put a hell of a lot more work in, but I'd say thousands of hours into teaching myself to shoot, teaching myself to edit, working other jobs that I didn't enjoy whatsoever just to afford to pay for my equipment. So I think knowing that makes it a lot easier to say, no, my craft is worth X amount, and going from there.
I guess that's something very specific, probably to sports photographers. I guess also like in the travel industry and things as well, it's kind of there. But you know, with sports photographers, you shoot an event and you've got like hundreds of images of a bunch of athletes, and it's like, you know, you want to see people using them and you want to see people enjoying these images and sharing them. But then it's like you need to make a livelihood from it and you need to be paid for it. So it is difficult.
Exactly. I mean, it's all good and well to do something you love, but the thing that you love gets increasingly diminished if you aren't being paid or in any way compensated for that. Because, as they say, photo credit doesn't pay the bills.
And I also find it tricky, particularly with sports. I guess other things as well. But we're talking about sports, so we'll keep it to do with that. But there's so many amateur photographers out there that will shoot these things and then they'll go on Facebook and they'll upload like 250 images from these things and everyone will be fine using those because, you know, they're free. And it's like, that's really hard for you, obviously, like, you know, in most cases, like, your work tends to be better than these amateurs. I mean, sometimes there's some, don't get me wrong, really incredible amateur photographers out there. But often, like, that makes it difficult when people are like, well, why can't I have your images? This person puts them all out for free. But I guess if you looked at a different trade or something, like a plumber, for example, you know, if you need a plumber, you're going to pay for them. There's not a whole, like, bunch of amateur plumbers out there that are just happy to do it because they love plumbing, you know?
Yeah, I think that's very much a double-edged sword. I used to look at it from a negative perspective, like these people are taking potential clients away from me. But the flip side of that is they also give me something that I can measure my work against. And realistically, if they are able to do that for free, and if my work isn't good enough by comparison that people think that it should be paid for, then I think it's a good measure of kind of where you're at. And where I'm currently at is, I don't know how to say this without sounding cocky. I think photographers by nature do need to be a little bit cocky because you need to believe in your work. It's your business. I like to compare myself to people that are doing that work for free because I can use it as a measure. Here is the free alternative. Like by your plumbing comparison, it's like showing somebody like a hodgepodge plumbing job where you have a bunch of pipes and kind of water seeping out the side. And that's how, and like a professional plumbing job next to it. I mean, that's how I kind of present my photos. It's like, here's the free alternative, and here's what thousands of hours of hard work gets you. It's like, you can have something that you will treasure, you can frame, you can put on your wall, something that portrays emotion, captures the moment, or you can have something that doesn't really have any thought put into it. It's just taken on some basic equipment from the side of the track, the side of the pitch, side of the road. Yeah, and there's no thought. It doesn't capture it. Sure, you might be within the frame, but the emotion that it portrays is not the same. And I think that's the tricky thing, is like, I see that and I feel that. And there are certainly people out there that also feel that, but for most people, they don't care. They just want to see themselves. And it certainly does make it tricky.
That's awesome. That's awesome you can put the positive spin on or the everyone being out there. And I guess at the end of the day, everyone's out there just doing, you know, shooting because they enjoy it. So, yeah, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, that doesn't mean that I go out there and take the piss out of other photographers. Like, I love to see them out there. I always talk to people. And I think one of the things that really sticks out to me is when I was that person just hacking around, taking photos, upload them all and hope that some people find them and use them. Cam McKenzie, who's one of New Zealand's prolific mountain bike photographers, I was at Mountain Bike Nationals in Dunedin and I was out shooting the downhill. I came across Cam McKenzie, who actually offered to let me use his 300mm, and not having ever met me, talked to me for a grand total of 5 minutes, and he let me loose with his $5,000 lens, and that really stood out to me. So I always endeavour to be friendly, and if I find someone else out there shooting Canon, my gear bag's always open, because you never know. I mean, I think especially in this industry, it pays to be friendly, because you don't know who you're talking to, you don't know who they are or where they're going to be in 5 years. And yeah, I mean, it's a small community and it's important to be friendly because you don't know what you might learn, you don't know who you might meet.
Absolutely. So I've gotten a lot of work and a lot of opportunities through like fellow people in our industry and, you know, friends, and it gets you a lot further by just being nicer and a better person and helpful to each other rather than trying to make enemies or anything. So yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's a lot more common in the younger generation of photographers coming through. Not to say that the older generation are all like that, but I've certainly, in my experience, come across photographers that have treated me purely as competition, not as a fellow human being with a camera. So I think that goes a long way. Yeah, I think I'm sure Harry can attest to that as well. But yeah, it goes a long way to treat other people how you'd like to be treated, I think, both as a photographer and in life, as a primary school teacher once told me.
In terms of freelancing and photography, sports photography, what motivates you? Who inspires you? What inspires you? What keeps you going rather than quitting? Because obviously we've all had those thoughts.
When you asked me this last night, I was thinking about what inspires me, and I think it's a very tricky question because, like, a lot of the artists or photographers that I follow that inspire me, like, I follow them on Instagram, and while that's good, I'm not a huge fan of social media. I think it's very much a double-edged sword, and it leaves you thinking negatively about your own work a lot of the time. And so when I was kind of digging deep and trying to unpack who inspires me and what inspires me, I think just having a creative outlet is what inspires me, and being able to create things that make people feel emotions, that's really what it comes down to for me. Creating an image for a person where they can look at it and they can feel potentially what I felt in that moment, or something along those lines. And if I had to point to a person that influences me or a person that inspires me, I mean, it's a bit, I wouldn't say stereotype, but a bit of a typical answer, I guess, is Chris Burkhard. Namely his podcast that he did with the Adventure Stash back in 2019. I highly recommend that. He talks a lot about storytelling and putting the camera down and living the moment as well as capturing it. And I think that's something that I live by to this day. Everywhere that I go with my camera, I try to experience it. I try to talk to the people. I try to live the experience rather than just from behind the camera through the viewfinder. And I think I try to tie my photography in with telling a story. And yeah, I think that's really important, because why are you taking photos? It's to portray an event. It's to show something. So yeah, if you're interested in that, I would highly recommend it. Go and check out the Adventure Stash and his podcast with Chris Burkhard.
I'll definitely go listen to that, man. That's really cool. I don't really, I obviously know who Chris Burkhard is, but I actually don't follow him, and I don't really look at too much of his work. Obviously I've seen it and it's very good, but I don't know too much of him about him, so I'll definitely go check that out.
I think for anybody that enjoys photography and cycling, I think he's a really interesting figure in our industry. He does a lot of bike packing, a lot of long distance cycling, ultra cycling, I guess you could potentially call it.
I always forget that he is a cyclist as well, eh?
I think he's an incredible athlete. Not genetically, but just through hard work, and I think that's what sets him apart from a lot of other photographers, is commitment, commitment to his craft, commitment to who he is as a person. And I think that's also important, is no matter what you're doing, always try to progress yourself, always try to do something different, do something new.
That's really cool to hear, man. Thank you. What are your goals around photography?
It's a tricky question. I'm in a position where I'm still very much testing the waters and trying to find my feet. So I'd say my goals are just to become sustainable first and foremost, where every day is not is this going to work? Can I be sustainable will I always be thinking of, I need a second job to help hold this together? And I think more long term is just to work on building positive relationships with brands and clients and get to work consistently overseas.
I mean, obviously I've seen your work and I've seen a lot of it, and I have no doubt that you will get there. And I'm sure anyone else that has seen your work thinks the same. But yeah, it's really cool to hear. I love talking about goals with people. I think it's so interesting.
Might as well flip this podcast on its head. What are your goals? Where are you headed?
Well, obviously, one of my biggest goals, and you know this, is that I want to photograph the Tour de France. And we are obviously planning on doing that next year, which I am super excited for. And then the lead on from that is I would love to make a living from photographing pro cycling and the Tour de France and events like that. But it's not really all I want to do. I would love to work on making documentaries as well, around athletes and around adventure and outdoors and hiking and, you know, nature and things like that. So I'm pretty open-minded with them, but they're definitely there. And, you know, I also have financial goals around, as a business, what I want to reach and where I want to be, as well. So yeah, I think that's, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think that answers my question perfectly. I think it also reflects kind of where you are in your career. Right now, I am very uncertain of what the future holds, and it sounds like you are slightly more dialed and you have a better idea of what the future holds and what you would like it to hold for you as well. So I think it's inspirational.
Thank you. Thank you. Cheers. Would you rather own an amazing pair of slippers or a beautiful armchair?
Goodness, owning neither, I feel spoilt for choice.
I feel spoiled because I own both.
Oh, you are the problem of modern society.
I am where consumerism starts.
You are the top 1%.
Said no photographer ever.
God smiles upon me every single day. Oh, slippers or armchair? Oh, I've got to go for slippers. I don't spend a lot of time outside of my work chair and my bed when I'm stationary. So, whereas
slippers are a good choice.
Yeah, I mean, I like to cook in shoes. Fun little side note. And yeah, I think slippers, perfect. I don't need to be cooking in running shoes. I would quite enjoy a comfy pair of sheepskin.
Amazing. I'll send you a link to some good ones after this.
I thought you were paying me for this.
Awkward. All right. Cheers for that, man. Before we wrap things up real quickly, where can people find you on social media and things if they do want to check out your work, obviously?
Yeah, cool. So best place to find me really is Cullen Brown on Instagram. I do post a little bit on my personal Facebook page, even less so on CB Photography, but those two are kind of a work in progress. So yeah, if you want my insights, my thoughts, some of my favorite photos, yeah, check me out at Cullen Brown on Instagram.
Let's wrap this thing up then. Thank you so much for coming on. I do really appreciate it. Obviously, it was both our first podcast, which was quite exciting. But here's to many more, hopefully.
Yeah, fingers crossed, eh? Only uphill from here.
All right. Thank you so much, mate.
Beautiful. As always, armchairs and slippers.
Armchairs and slippers forever. All right, that pretty much concludes the podcast. Just want to say a huge thank you to Cullen for coming on. This was my first recording for Armchairs and Friends, so I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I am. And if you're still here, I want to say a big thank you for still being here. I really appreciate it, and I really enjoyed it. So here's to many more, hopefully. If there's anyone in particular you want to see on the podcast or anything you'd love to hear my opinion on or hear me chat about, obviously just send me a message. You can find me on Instagram pretty easily at Visuals of Harry. Other than that, I want to say, yeah, a huge thank you for listening. Really appreciate it, and I will catch you guys all in the next one, which I have no idea when that will be, but hopefully it's not too long.